て。Death Random。With your host, GMC.
And a very good evening or afternoon or, well, you know the drill. This is Death Random on Signal Hackerspace Radio. It's December 22nd, 2011, 2000 CET. And this is GMC live from Studio RefSpace in The Hague. And, well, it's the last show of this year, last Death Random of this year at least. And, I can say I'm done with the year. I'm pretty tired of all the work I did, so I'm ready for some vacation. So I'm heading off to Berlin next week to do some more work, actually. I mean, no rest for the wicked, right? Oh, well, that's... you know, that's how things go. We've got some nice subjects today. We've got the Low Tech Magazine. In addition, we have also got lasers, the Laos Laser Project. And finally, we will have a bit about the Space Status API. What is that? You will find out. But first, the news. And we start with news from the USA. The HOPE tickets, HOPE, the Hackers on Planet Earth, a two-yearly conference in New York City, organized by our friends from 2600. And it's going to take place in the Penn Hotel, Hotel Penn I saw, which is odd because I thought it was going to be demolished. Apparently they managed to save it. Anyway, the last dozen discounted tickets for HOPE number 9 are available still, so be quick. They go for $85 instead of the normal $120. And, well, head over to 2600.com and... all the information is there. It's on July 13, 14, 15 in New York City. Something else from the United States. ACTA, the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, that we all love, of course, is unfortunately almost ratified by the European Commission. The European Parliament still has to vote on it. And then I'm afraid we will be confronted with this, I don't know, agreement that no one knows really what it's about because it's all discussed in secret. But one thing is for sure, it will not be good for your internet freedom. Meanwhile, the sensible fraction of the populace of the aforementioned nation state is fighting their own battle against a SOPA, which is a similar bill introduced in the United States. So, it's not just us Europeans and the rest of the world that are suffering from this. It's everyone. I hope they have better luck stopping this horrible initiative. In other news, Limesco, it's a Dutch mobile telephony initiative with an interesting twist. Instead of the normal big company, anonymous, hiding behind customer service... this is actually a telephone provider that's run by and for the users, actually. There's a whole community behind it. They've been going for a year now, sitting around the table discussing options with a lot of, well, market actors. And they've reached a very interesting deal. So pretty soon we will be able to get a SIM card and route our own telephony, route our own data, Well, just have freedom in telephony and transparency. No more of those packages where you pay too much for too little. So, if you want to know more about that, you can go to limesco.org or limesco, L-I-M-E-S-C-O.org. More news from the United States. The Familab has moved. They are in Florida, Orlando, if I'm not mistaken. They were in, well, sort of a garage on a train. And now they have a pretty nice building with more options. And I wish them the best of luck over there. The blog from Hackerspace Noisebridge in San Francisco got hacked, which goes to prove that even hackers aren't safe if they don't upgrade their software, because there was an old MediaWiki install that was abused, by which some files were injected and the blog got defaced and redirected to some Russian site, if I'm not mistaken. Finally, some news from Vienna, where the esteemed Nick Farr is currently holding temporary residence. He says, "We go to war with our enemies to build a world where war is replaced by love. We should probably learn how to love our enemies. That starts with a dialogue. Write a love letter to your enemy, whoever it is, even if it's yourself." So that's a call for action. I think you have until Tuesday to write a love letter to your enemy. And you can send all these love letters to loveletters@nickfarr.org. More information about this on www.occupyallhearts.org. And with that, I think it's time for some music. And then we will move to our first main subject. And I have some electronica. Paco, Under the Influence of Electronica. So I live in a world full of nerds who like technology and can't resist the temptation to come up with lovely, complicated technological solutions to all kinds of problems, losing track of actually of reality and pragmatic considerations. There's a fresh breeze in the atmosphere recently that I came across. It's called Low Tech Magazine, and the chief editor is, I think, Chris De Decker, and he's with me on the phone. Hi.
Hi. Good evening.
Hey, how are you? I'm actually calling to... what country are you in at the moment?
I am in Spain.
Ah, lovely. How's the weather over there?
The weather is quite good, actually.
Ah, that's bad. Here it's cold and wet.
We don't need a heating here, so...
Oh, luxury,
that's
luxury.
Quite low-tech.
Oh, yeah, it is. So tell me, what is a low-tech magazine?
Well, we're an online magazine, and we basically question the blind faith in ever more sophisticated technology as a solution to all kinds of problems. And instead of that, we look for inspiration in obsolete technologies, in lost knowledge, and we try to not just go back to the past, but try to combine these old concepts and technologies with new materials, new knowledge, and like looking for a better way, basically.
Oh, cool.
We don't believe so much in what most people will see happen in the future.
Hey, and there's also the No Tech magazine. How does that relate to the Low Tech magazine?
Yeah, No Tech magazine is, someone described it as the evil twin brother of Low Tech magazine. So it brings basically shorter posts. Low Tech magazine is articles are quite long, they go rather deep. And No Tech magazine is a bit a bit less serious and a bit more radical. We bring quotes of philosophers who go against technology, for instance. Or we note that things like, for instance, that castration can be a solution to bring us better politicians, for instance. The ancient Chinese.
Well, I know a few politicians that would apply to. The articles on Low Tech magazine, they are pretty good, well researched. What is your background, actually?
I am a freelance journalist. So I was working for the traditional newspapers and magazines for 10 or 11 years. And I was mostly writing about science, technology, internet, computers, that kind of stuff. And basically that's where I got the idea from Low Tech magazine, because they made me report all this high-tech stuff. And after a while, I was like, yeah, it never works. I mean, it always brings more, it seems to bring more problems than it solves.
It does. And sometimes it's even applied to solve a problem that's not really a problem, actually.
Yeah, also. Yeah.
But you're now a technophobic person then, right?
No, I'm not technophobic. I'm holding a mobile phone in my hand now. And I'm writing on a computer, not on a typewriter. So it's not that I'm against technology. It's just that I feel that technology is going in a wrong direction. Basically, because of this cheap supply of fossil fuels that we had for 100 years, made us design all kinds of stuff that are a bit out of this world, I think.
Yeah, we just buy it, use it for a year and throw it away, right? And get the new, the next best thing.
Yeah, that's one of the things, like when you talk about gadgets and computers are wonderful, they are great. I don't want to see them disappear, but why do I have to buy a new computer every 3 years? That's ridiculous. Why I have to update to a new Windows system every 5 years? That's
It is insane. It is insane. So that sort of explains the motivation behind the magazine. Are you doing it on your own, or do you get some help?
Yeah, basically it's me writing it, and then some people who like correct my English because I'm not a native speaker.
Neither am I.
Yeah, and then more and more I get, there's lots of input from readers, huh? Especially the NoTech magazine. Many of the short posts are readers basically who send them to me, sometimes write mails to me that I can publish right away, but basically it's a one-man's show for the moment.
Okay. And yeah, it's a lot about also about technology that has become obsolete. For example, yeah. I was reading an interesting piece on boats that were, well, propelled by electric motors with all kinds of contraptions to transfer electric power from the shore to the boat. But also, I myself have a car. It runs on LPG, liquefied petrol gas. I thought it was pretty recent until I saw a piece that there actually have been cars like 60, 80 years ago with bags on the roof with gas in it. So some of the technology actually comes back again. But why does technology go obsolete, do you think?
Yeah, I think most of the things I write about on the blog have become obsolete because of fossil fuels. We didn't need them anymore because we had a much more concentrated, or we still have them, have it, much more concentrated source of energy, like the trolley boats you were referring to. Yeah, that was great as long as there was a constraint on energy. And since we had oil, it's much easier to just put the fuel tank of a big ship full of oil and sail away. And that's what basically it's almost everything has gone obsolete because of that. While these trolley boats, for instance, the gas back vehicles are a bit less practical, I think.
True.
But the trolley boats are basically it's a very sound technology that almost consumes no energy. It's electric, but you don't need batteries because you are attached to wires. And it also looks needlessly complicated with all these wires over the canals and stuff.
Yeah, maybe. But if you look at a generic big European city, there's trams, there's even some cities where they have trolley buses. It also has all these wires. So we are still using it for those things. Do you think at some point some technologies that you describe will sort of become unobsoleted again, become back in fashion?
Yeah, like some cities have revived their trolley buses. Like there used to be much more lines, and there are still them. Like in France, you have some cities where they revive them again. Yes, it's not. In general, you can say like everything will come back. Like electric cars were also there 100 years ago, but they still have the same problems. And I also don't see the mechanical computers coming back or the optical telegraph coming back. Mm. So some things are just nice to know and can be inspiring, but other things can be really used again, like the oven stoves, for instance, these heating appliances from the Middle Ages. Yeah, these are great and you can use them as they are, basically. But when they will come back in fashion, then energy, cheap energy has to disappear, I guess.
Well, that's a given, right? At some point, we've used up most of the oil and it's going to become really expensive. At least that's a theory. It's funny that you mentioned the electric cars as well, because in the article, actually, it's really a well-founded explanation of how the electric cars of decades ago actually are as efficient as the current electric cars, and that there's not much progress in that area.
No, except for, of course, the speed and the weight of the vehicles. But We have cars that go much faster now. Our electric cars are much heavier. They have electronics inside. But basically, that's the reason why they don't get more efficient, because all this progress in speed, in engine output, it eats away the progress you make in energy-efficient engines. And that happens with many technologies. So if we want, basically, the thing is with electric cars, we don't need better batteries, because people are always waiting for better batteries for 100 years already. They always think it's going to be around the corner. But what we need is better cars, and it's basically more low-tech cars, slower cars, lighter cars. And yeah, it's people at the moment, they're not ready for that, I think.
It's a general thing. Just next year they will invent something and all our problems are solved. It's
exactly.
It's an endless...
But the funny thing is, if you read old books from the beginning of the 20th century about electric cars, they say exactly the same things as they are saying now on the ecotech and green tech blocks. So yeah.
Yeah. So who knows? In 80 years from now, people will be reading the low tech magazine, and there will be a follow up, and well, they will still be in the same stage. Hey, we have to round up because time is limited. I was wondering, of all the things you've described on the Low Tech magazine, what is your favorite old technology that's still very applicable in these days?
Well, there's many things that we've forgotten, and that's very nice to write about. But basically, I think the most valuable invention of the early industrial revolution is the bicycle. And I think that's the best invention ever. It's still used, but it has much more potential.
Interesting.
I mean, you can get anywhere with a bicycle as long as we have roads. I think that would be my favorite.
Excellent. Hey, and for the listeners that are interested in reading all these magnificent articles that give us a view of technology decades, sometimes centuries ago, where do they go?
They go to lowtechmagazine.com.
Excellent.
One word.
Lowtechmagazine.com. Thank you for speaking to me from Spain.
You're welcome.
Have a good holiday. And
thank you.
Well, bye-bye. And with that, it's time for some more music, techno music, high-tech techno music. I can seriously recommend you go to lowtechmagazine.com. It's such a wealth of knowledge that we just forgot, and it's all technological. With that, I have Septic Underground with a song called Mental. this is actually some quite low-tech music as well. Really overdriven. DJ machine shows just one big green bar instead of nice waveforms. Well, it's the kind of music I like, actually. Well, from low-tech back to high-tech, we've got lasers. I mean, we recently received a laser cutter at RevSpace, but the control board was missing. That was a bit odd, so, well, we had to get busy figuring out what was going on. And with me is Jaap van Maas, who needs no introduction, I think. And you know more about this, right, Jaap?
Yeah, that's true. We are writing software to make lasers work on open source. And that was the idea of the machine that's also in RevSpace, to have an open source laser there.
Okay, because basically we got a Chinese cutter, a pretty standard unit, tested, of course. Mechanically, everything is perfect. Except there's no controller hardware, so we have to replace that. And you're working on the Laos project. What does it stand for, Laos?
Well, it stands for Laser Open Source.
Ah.
The website is laoslaser.org, and there you can read all about it. The idea is that it's not depending on what kind of hardware you have, as long as it's a laser cutter. You can use our software with it. And we started the project because many of these Chinese lasers, they come with very crappy Windows software that is beyond your imagination of how bad software can really be. It's usually you have to write, you have to design things in one specific program, and it's very hard to use other programs for designing and then converting it into this one program that you can use to print.
So you're pretty much stuck with this one program. Well, it's CorelDRAW, I think. And of course.
Well, then you're lucky.
Oh, okay. So there's even more crappy.
There's things called MoshiDRAW and other. They're basically, they look like CorelDRAW, but they are not as advanced.
Okay.
And if you have CorelDRAW, at least you can import other formats. But with these programs, it's very hard to import things.
Okay, so basically all laser cutters have like a two motors for the position, X and Y axis, and a laser on-off switch, right?
Yeah, if you look closely on the machine that is delivered to RevSpace, you will see that actually the laser doesn't actually have an on-off switch. It has a control knob, and with the cheapest laser software, you're supposed to set the laser power by hand while it's running.
Oh, wow.
So if the machine is going slower, you have to lower the laser power by hand.
Okay, and just by looking at it, or is it giving some indications like turn it up, turn it down? Or?
No, well, when the material that you're cutting is getting too black, you turn it down.
Okay.
But of course, there's smarter ways to do it. You can do this from software as well. That's one of the things we built into these machines. So actually, just by installing our boards, even though our software is not finished yet, already your machine will improve.
Okay, so just shortly about the controller board, because that's something I think that's readily transplanted from the world of RepRaps, 3D printers. Also build it, DIY CNC mills.
Yeah.
What are we using? What kind of CPU power goes in there?
The CPU that we use is it's on a Mbed board. Mbed is an Arduino on steroids kind of thing. It's slightly faster than Arduino's, and it has far more outputs. And we didn't have enough outputs on the Arduino. It's a NXP 1768 processor on these boards.
So that's ARM-based, right?
It's an ARM-based chip. And yeah, basically the software that we use, the embedded software that we write for this is in C++.
Okay. So so the hardware problem is mostly solved by you already. That's quite cool.
Yeah.
So now there's work to be done on the software, because where are we with the software? Well, what's the current state?
We made a big step ahead last week by implementing accelerated motion in the software. If you move the laser across the material, you don't want to do it at a steady speed, but you want to do it as fast as possible. So to do that, you have to accelerate and decelerate when you go into a corner.
Ah, right.
And at the same time also have feedback to lower the laser power if you go through a curve, which is something that the cheap machines don't do. they just go with the standard power all the time.
Right.
But we implemented the accelerated motion part this week.
Wow.
And that's now working. And one of the most important things that is still missing is the engraving of bitmaps. That's one of the, if you use vector drawings.
So like lines, yeah. Basically you've got this point and then you go, you say from this point I go this many points in that direction.
Yeah, as long as you send vectors to the laser, our software can already do almost anything that you might need, but it cannot handle bitmaps yet.
Okay.
But it's still some work to be done.
So there's still something to be done. As I understand it, next year, actually in the first 2 weeks into the new year, there will be a happening ETH Zero Winterland. And you were going to bring one of these machines, right?
Yeah, we will bring a few of these machines.
Oh, wow.
I hope. And we'll also bring the hardware, the boards that we use in these machines, and some soldering irons and spare boards if people want to build them for themselves.
Huh?
We will be working there on developing the software a bit.
Excellent. Sourcing
and
the crowd.
People who want to see this and join in are welcome.
Excellent. I'm sure we from RevSpace will also bring ours, because we want to get it working, of course.
I think this will be an excellent opportunity to finish it.
Indeed.
So I hope RevSpace, the people in RevSpace, have time to solder the board together before the weekend, and we can test it there and have it running.
I think so. They all have a time between Christmas and New Year's Eve, because surprisingly a lot of people here are not going to Berlin this year. It's times are changing.
Yeah.
You already mentioned it, but if people want to know more about this machine, where do they go?
They go to laoslaser.org. And most of the information is on the wiki page. It looks like the standard media wiki. It's nothing special, but it's all there. The software and hardware designs, it's all open source.
Cool.
Yeah. And
if people need
you will also find a link to our mailing list there. So if you have more questions, you can ask them on the mailing list.
Sounds good. One last quick question. If people want a machine of their own, how do they go about it? Can they just buy any Chinese cutter and start with it? Or
they can build their own cutter. They can buy a Chinese cutter. We have a discount with an English cutter machine.
Importer.
They are importing machines from China. They're not making them themselves. but the advantage is that it's a bit closer by than getting something ordered in Hong Kong or whatever.
True, and they test them for you, right? So just one last question. I just thought of this. What actually happens to the boards that they take out?
Actually, they don't put them in.
Okay, so they come without the board. I get it.
The machines that go to the UK are assembled in the UK. And the boards that go in, normally in the machines, are quite expensive. So they don't order them. They put them in the UK.
Cool. Well,
for all the machines.
Thanks for talking to me. It's a very interesting development in the world of laser cutters. I will see you soon again.
Yeah, I hope that with this software, it becomes possible for every hackerspace to have a laser cutter. So,
that's what we're going for.
Hopefully, the hackerspaces in the Netherlands will be the first with that.
Well, we will try to set a good example. Okay. So you heard it. Go to laoslasers.org. You'll find all the details. And it's time for some music again. I have queued here Dubtrack, and it's the Dubtrack Original Mix 2009 Part 1. And as usual, all the music is Creative Commons again. You can find all of these tracks on Jamendo, because I was lazy while combating a pre-Christmas crisis at the customer today, which also explains my lack of preparation. But, well, we're actually still on track, so preparation is overrated. The next subject started on a rainy Sunday afternoon, and I was thinking about an idea that I had, I don't know, years ago. Let's make an app, you know, mobile app. I didn't get my G1 developer phone just to call with it. I wanted to actually do something with it, but I never got around to it until we had a hackerspace, and well, hackerspace can be open or closed, and I thought, how cool would it be to have an app on my phone that just shows, is the hackerspace open or closed? So that's where it started. I hacked something together. A few weeks after that, I was alerted on Twitter about a meeting in Amsterdam called Amsterdam. It's a group of hackers, and they get together to build apps. And there was an introductory course in Android development, which I took as a chance to speak with some experienced Android developers. And I thought, well, let's make something more of this app. I was parsing some HTML that was crap, so I decided I need some API thingy. I defined some JSON rules, like how to format an object, which I unassumingly published on hackerspaces.nl, and to my surprise, it was actually taken up first in the Netherlands, but then worldwide, Belgium, the US even, there's some German space, and I don't know where. It's quite interesting how these things go. And one of the spaces far, far away from where I live, but probably as cold as where I live, Chicago, Pumping Station 1. And with me is Eric. He is one of the people doing a lot of cool stuff there. And you thought, hey, that's a cool idea, this API. Let's go with that.
Yeah, I saw your post. I think it was on a RevSpace IRC channel about the API that you specified. So these things interest me, these interspace communications. One of the things I wanted to do for a while was a video chat network, but that sort of hasn't gone together. But one of the most important things is to be able to say, what's going on with all these other places in the world? Because your hackerspace may have 10, 20, 200 people, but it doesn't have all the hackers in the world. It just has some of them. So to join together all those things, that's what the hackerspace passport is for as well, to pull together all these communities that are certainly a little bit spread out right now, and you want to be able to join them together. And I thought, I said, okay, that's really interesting. I would like to be able to know, if I was in another city, what's going on right here? Is there a hackerspace? Can I go there right now? Without having to like look on the wiki and see if it's a real hackerspace or if it's still around, find the website, find out that you can't contact them, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to make a way to specify that. And I've actually been working with a system that determines whether our space is busy, called Lidless, and our installation is called SpaceMon. It uses cameras to watch to determine whether there's anything going on in any of the rooms. And I actually already had a JSON API going on. Okay. On my system. So I thought, I'll add another handler that can translate the information into a are we open or are we closed sort of status. And it really was not that hard. It took me like just an hour or two to get everything working, which was very interesting. And then my friend Joe, he created something called the Globe, I think, that will actually look at the directory that you did and can show little dots on the world, showing which ones are open and which ones are closed.
Yeah, that's actually quite cool because, yeah, I sort of published this JSON API to enable other people to also publish information that my app then could use. But as the number of spaces grew, I was thinking, well, let's put them all together in one URL that you can get a list of all the spaces that have this API. And this globe is actually quite cool. You can you see like the globe, and there's red and green beams going up into space where you can see what's open in what part of the world. But what's the URL? Do you know it? Is that actually...
Is it open right now? Well, I'm on a roof of my office to give good cell reception right now. And my phone is the only the only internet access I have up here. But if you go to apps.pumpingstation1.org/space-activity, you can see graphs. I don't have a way of visualizing the Hackerspace API endpoint we're running right now, except via that globe that Joe did, or looking at the JSON directly in a browser. Like, we are going to put a little widget on our homepage, though.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. That's also one of the... I mean, and that's the beauty. Once you publish this information, it's the whole thing about, just open specifications and getting information. Other people jump on it and start to innovate. That's really cool. But it's indeed right up your alley, right? You've been connecting the world with the space and the space with the cyberspace.
The world, yeah.
And one of the cool things you mentioned is the lidless, right? The IRC lights.
Oh, yeah. No, lidless is the camera system. I call it, the tagline is a lidless eye reason webcam.
Ah.
Sort of a Lord of the Rings reference. But it also, if you picture like a little dollhouse and the roof is taken off and you see everything because there's no lid, it's the same sort of idea. Like, say,
got it.
You don't have to really like look in depth to see what's going on. It's just like, oh, look, here's what, this room is busy, this room is busy, this room has been getting more busy over time if you look at the graphs. And another thing I actually did want to do is propose an additional field for a reference to the lidless API, because it's another JSON API. For getting very specific data about which rooms have which busyness, you can request historical information as well. But the chat light you were talking about, the LEDs, it goes a little bit full circle, because the lidless program I wrote first, it has an IRC bot interface, so you can query the busyness of the rooms via an IRC channel. But if you look at it the other way and say, okay, you're in the physical space, and you want an ambient understanding of what's going on in the world. So I thought, okay, I can make something, a bot that can look at the IRC channel and see who's talking, how many of them, and use keywords to determine what they're talking about and how fast by measuring the number of lines they say. And doing that, I've got a Python program running on our server rack, which analyzes the IRC room, and that talks over a zero and Q bus to another Python program that sends the commands to the Arduino to say, hey, light up these bulbs in the box that sits on the wall. So you can see a little row of red LEDs to show how many people are talking in the channel. And so you may just be sitting at the table in the main space and just see a bunch of red lights and go, hold on. And you look back at what you're doing, but then you see the light change again, and you say, okay, it's green. And green means outdoor talk. So people are talking about hiking or skiing or something like that. And you think, okay, that interests me. I want to talk to these people. And then you can just hop on the IRC channel very quickly, and you already get the feel for the room. You don't have that I just joined the IRC room and I have no idea sort of feel. Which often comes in, you're like, join, you don't know if they're idle until they talk, and you really just don't have any idea what's going on.
Yeah.
You just start up with nothing. And we also have an IRC station right next to the light, so anyone who doesn't know what IRC is, doesn't know how to connect, all that stuff, can just sit down, and they're already online, and they can see what people are saying.
Oh.
Something I added to that on Sunday, actually, was a summoning tool to page people in the space. The IRC bot that analyzes also has now a feature. You can use the page command, and it will flash a strobe light in the space. And if anyone's there, then they think, okay, someone wants to talk to me from IRC. So it's almost like a public phone, except people don't like to talk on the phone anymore. So I added
just
in this
interface
there.
Well, that's a really cool, like bringing the virtual and it's not virtual, but like the online.
Circle, yeah.
It's. I mean, we have a terminal here. I think we need one of these lights as well.
All the stuff is on GitHub. I can send it to you.
Oh yeah, cool. I think I'm about to wrap up here because, time is almost over. I was just wondering, maybe we can just look ahead a bit. We have the API now. There's some data defined. You already mentioned there's stuff you want to put in there that's not in the spec, although, a spec is a big word, but it leaves some room for that. Friend of mine, Brimstone, from Make Us Local in Alabama, he was talking about we have all these temperature sensors. We want them in there as well. So I think we need to...
Yeah, I don't know Make Us Local, but...
Sorry?
It's funny. People get the feeling that Alabama and Chicago are close, but they're not. It's a ways. It's over 1,000 miles, I believe. But we do sometimes have people coming and visiting. I would want to reach out to them and find out what they're doing.
It's one cool space over there. But we have to think about how to expand this and be able to put that kind of data in there as well. There is room now in the API to put your own custom fields in there, but I guess it's just a matter of who does it first can set the standard, and then it gets merged in. And one thing I want to address as well, I mean, it's a unidirectional thing now, right? You publish information and that's about it.
And whoever wants it can get it. It's not pushed in any specific direction.
True, but it's also not going the other way. Like, if I make an app, wouldn't it be cool if a space could, like, publish some information that the app knows? If I send a signal there, then the summoning light goes on, for example. So you can also
adding that into the API would be a very interesting idea. That's a good one.
Or things like you're on the road, you check your app, the space is open, and you tap a button, hey, and then on the IRC it said, hey, GMC is on the way, he'll be there in about 45 minutes. I mean, it's all kinds. I've got lots of ideas for this. It's
another bot I have is one that allows our members to do a bit of a head check-in. It's like Foursquare in the future. I know that sounds a bit presumptuous, but you can say, hey, I'm going to schedule myself to be at the space in like 3 hours, and I'll be there for about 4 hours. And then other people can query to say, okay, who is Tobo going to be there? Is Jim going to be there? And it'll say whether or not it knows.
Yeah.
It hasn't got too much usage yet. It was sort of new.
Okay. Yeah, we already solved it because we have an electronic door lock, so you have to unlock it with a key. So, yeah, it's enough. If people...
You already have that information.
Yeah, yeah. If
you people have to supply that, yeah.
Yeah, but well, it's a choice, actually, but most people choose to let that be published on the IRC channel, at least. A few less. There's a couple of people who don't feel comfortable with having it in the JSON. That's another interesting area here, like privacy and... do you want to publish all that?
But some people would take issue with that.
As long as we offer a choice, I don't see a problem with it.
No, I don't either.
Well, cool. Hey, it was great talking to you, and thanks for being so enthusiastic about one of my ideas. I always like it when that happens.
Yeah.
And
I always like good ones.
Thank you. I'm sure we will have many discussions on the subject on the various online media. For now, though, the show is coming to an end, unfortunately. The last show of 2011, Dev Random. Of course, it's not the last time I will be on the virtual airwaves. And actually, it's not the last time I will be on the Ether airwaves, like the old-fashioned, low-tech airwaves. Because at 28C3, the Congress in Berlin, Signal will be there. I'm bringing the whole studio. And we are going to broadcast a number of shows that are also going to be broadcasted on free radio FM stations in Berlin, Hanover, and, Vienna as well, of course. If you want to know more about that, go to the 28C3 wiki. And just look for Congress Radio. One word, that's the topic. I have one more song for my listeners on this last show. And it's by a Mr. Venderson. It's called Groove is the Art. And it's, appropriately lazy for the hour. It is over here. Because it's getting late, I'm tired, and I'm signing off. This was GMC on December 22nd, live from Studio RevSpace with... with Dev Random. I said that already. Thanks for listening, and see you all next year.